everybody. My name is Mark. I'm an alcoholic. Whenever there's a microphone, I'm like, not guilty. I don't know what to do with it. Do I grab it? Do I hold it? Do I move it? First off, I'd like to say thank you to you guys for inviting me out. It's not lost on me. You know, it wasn't that many years ago where there wasn't people asking me to go anywhere, asking me to do anything. You know, so the fact that I get invited places today is like mesmerizing to me. People weren't like, hey kid, you think you can come back and do the dishes? Like, people weren't asking me to go nowhere. They're like, stay away from my pocketbook. So it's not lost. Maybe some of you were fortunate enough tonight to come with some friends, man. Because I remember not too many years ago where, like, I didn't have any. You know, and so I think it's the simple things that I and a few of my friends take for granted around here that we missed the mark on. But, geez, for starters, I have a sponsor. I talked to him today. Sobriety date is July 16th, 2014. I didn't pick it. I didn't plan it. I kind of ran out of money. Like, there is no part of me that ever thought, like, long-term sobriety sounded like a good idea. It didn't even seem to sound attainable to me. I have a home group, No Human Power Group. It's in Levittown. Friday night, 7:30, big book study. If you're in town, come check it out, man. It's a good time, or at least I think so. I do my best to try to help other people today, and I think that's all the tangibles, yeah? I was driving in and saw, like, castles. Anybody else? Like, is that, that's like the norm around here? Like, castles everywhere? I'm like, where am I at, man? I gotta move up here. And then I saw the flower. It said, bring blankets. I had no idea the meeting was outside. I'm like, bring blankets. That's a new one, man. But, I don't know. Geez, my story is boring to me. I don't know. I was born. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't my fault. You can't blame me. I'm from Philadelphia. I come from parents that are still married 25 plus years. They do something that's foreign to a guy like me. They cuddle. Like, what is that? Get it away from me. Ew. I have a younger brother who's buying a one-way ticket to Alcoholics Anonymous. It just hasn't arrived in the mail yet. I have an older sister currently living in a recovery house. She just celebrated 7 months of continuous sobriety. You know, it's amazing what happens around here. You take somebody like me and you drop me in Alcoholics Anonymous and my life's recreated. Totally changed. The crazy part is I wasn't looking for it. You know? That's what's wild. But I picked up my first drink, I was 14 in New Jersey. Like, I don't know, stay out of Jersey. Like, don't go there. Like, I don't know what to tell people. Like, there wasn't this magical fireworks type deal that had happened. I drank with one other kid. We split a bottle of Bacardi 151. And two 14-year-olds shouldn't finish an entire bottle, but we did. You know, it was the only time in my life I fell asleep outside homeless. Growing up, I played sports. I don't know if anybody identifies with that. Put me on a basketball court or a football field, an athletic environment for 1 hour. Everything stops. Everything dies. What people think of me, what my parents think, what my teachers think, what anybody has to say about me is irrelevant. I'm totally locked into what I'm doing. And so sports would carry me all the way up until I was about 22, 23 years old. It worked. I grew up in Northeast Philadelphia, so I would hang out with the Mayfair kids, right? And then I'd hang out with the Princeton kids, and then I'd go down to Kensington before it was cool to, like, be homeless down there. And I'd hang out with the kids that were wearing, like, 9XL white t-shirts. You know what I'm talking about? Like, hangs to your ankles. It looks like a dress, you know? I'd hang out with preppy kids, wear tight clothes, goth kids, paint my nails black, the whole nine. I didn't realize I was doing this, but I will sell out on who I am and mold to what I think you want me to be on the idea that maybe you'll like me. I had no idea I was doing that my entire life. I'll change every variable about me on the idea that maybe you'll like me. It took me years to learn that inside the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know. Jeez. I went from high school to college, and I played sports in college, and it worked, man. And drinking would progress when I was in college. You ever drinking with people, and you're drinking so much that the people you're drinking with are looking at you, and they're like, maybe you have a problem. It's like, there's evidence, sign number one. Anybody else drink for like 10 years, like before it even dawned on you? Maybe there's a problem to the way I'm living my life. Anybody? Like a decade of your life gone before it even dawns on me. Like, maybe this is a bad idea. It's like 10 years before I even question the behavior. And then like another two or three before I'll listen to a single person. I was so naive, man. I was 26 years old when I landed in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I really thought I knew more than the people that got here before me. You know how crazy that is? Like, I really thought I had all the answers to life at 26 years old. mesmerizing. And so I was drinking in college, and some people would look at me and they'd go, we think you might have a problem. And because I was drinking a case of beer, right? And so I would keep two cases in the fridge and I would drink them. And so they're like, we think you may be an alcoholic. Now, I don't know what an alcoholic is. So my buddy Leach, I go to him and I'm saying, people think I might be an alcoholic. What do you think? And he said, Mark, do you like the way it tastes? Now, I'm a broke college kid drinking the worst tasting stuff on the planet. I'm like, absolutely not. I hate the way it tastes. He's like, then you're probably not an alcoholic. That was as limited as my idea was. No idea. Come to find out, I've never drank a day in my life for the taste. Do you know that there's normal people out there that go to something like wine and cheese? Like they go, they pair liquor with cheese and crackers. I never paired with anything. It was just like, give it to me. Actually, I'll skip the meal. Some of the best times were, I don't know about anybody else, but I'm not spending money to eat. Like I'll take the last few dollars I have and I'll gather up some quarters. And so some of the best meals I had was at Wendy's, you know, dollar menu. And I'll get a cheeseburger and what I'll do is I'll make it last 3 days. And I don't realize I'm starting to sacrifice everything I have in my life. Anybody sacrifice sleep? Their kids? Your own well-being, your own health, eating, friendships, connection, one by one by one. One of the most powerful things I've ever seen on this planet, and I think it could be agreed across the board, is a mother or father's love for their child. Agreed? Yeah? I've watched untreated alcoholism shred that in seconds to where parents are bum-rushing their kids, they're taking them where they gotta go, or they're just leaving them. And so I always meet people, and my question to people is like, people just think they're gonna man up against it. Because that's what I thought when I got here. Like, oh, I'll figure it out. I had no idea what I was up against. And actually, the longer I'm sober, the more scary it becomes. I've had friends of mine, 5, 10, 15 years sober, drift from Alcoholics Anonymous, pick up a drink again. You see, that's not what's crazy to me. It's not crazy that alcoholics drink. What's crazy to me is people that have been plugged in for years, decades, slowly stop coming here, and they're the last to find out. It's like they don't even know what's happening to them. And then they pick up a drink, and then the next thing you know, off to the races again. And I've watched that happen to quite a few people. I work in a treatment center, and people land in there quite often that had decades of sobriety, man. And so it's very eye-opening to me. And so I was drinking the way I drink. I had a college football injury, and I just drank more. Like, I don't know. Like, I drank more. And so it came night to graduate, and my mother comes up, and my father come up, my grandmother, my sister. It's the night of graduation. We're graduating the next morning. My mom said, kid, you got 4.5 years to party. Tomorrow's my day. Just show up. Don't be inebriated. And I looked my mother right in the face and I said, I'll be there. I'll make it. And so I drank that night and I had no idea about this illness. And I didn't know when I woke up the morning I was going to have to keep going. Like anybody else ever miss an event? You know what I mean? Like homeboy's wedding or something. Like, yeah, I'll be there. But you drank 3 days prior. Like I don't know how other people drank, but like I drank 3 days before spring break on senior week, and the next thing you knew, I missed the whole flight out there and landed in a bed with sand on me in Punta Cana. Like, I don't know how other people do it, but like when I pick up a drink, like it's just blackout mode. Like, and I run through people's lives. I think the biggest lie I told myself was when I came into AA and I said, the only person I'm hurting is myself. You see, because I got a brother who's running through the ringer right now and I watch what it's doing to my mother and father. You see, by the time I got done running through my mother and father, they were sleeping in separate beds in different households. Because mom's going to bat for me and dad's going, I can't take it no more. And then dad's going to bat for me and mom's going, I can't take it no more. And I'm pinning them against each other and I'm stealing my brother and sister's time that they're supposed to get because I continue to get in trouble and I continue to have problems and I continue to be bowed out. I don't know, I landed in AA and I thought I was a gangbanger. Here's the type of gangbanger I was. Mom, you think you could send me some money to pay the rent? But I thought I was a gangbanger. And so I met some people that have been around Alcoholics Anonymous long enough, and they said, you want to be a gangbanger, kid? Like, the people you're helping, why don't you try to teach them to pay child support? It's like, there's a gangbanger move. It's funny, I land in here, and I want to develop relationships with, like, members of the opposite sex, but, like, steer real far from mom and dad, the people that have been there for me from day one. Steer real far from the family, but I want to chase all this stuff with people I never even met before in my life. I don't know about anybody else. I was in a nut ward, and a girl walked past me. I smelled her hair. She was missing 5 teeth. I didn't shower for 3 weeks. And I'm like, ooh, that'll be a great idea. Brainiac. And so I drink. Graduation takes place. And I'm asleep in the chair. My buddy Leach has to wake me up. He's got to walk me to the podium. I shake the president's hand. I'm as white as those papers that flew away. My mother comes up to me afterwards and she says, I'm disgusted. All I wanted you to do was show up. I just wanted you to get here, man. Today was supposed to be about me, and you made it about you. She said, find your own way home. We don't want pictures. And the question I ask people is, like, you think I wanted to do that? Like, you think the people that are sleeping under Kensington Ave right now want to be there? You know what I mean? It's like, I didn't want to be there. Picture before you found Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the loneliest place in the world. Nobody to talk to, nobody to go to, nobody that's going to understand. Think I'm going to live the life I'm living for the rest of my life, and I have nowhere to go. It's one of the most remarkable things that we have around here. I've been to quite a few things, and quite a few different fellowships, spiritual retreats, silent retreats. I haven't found anything that touches this. It doesn't even come close. It's unbelievable, like, what's offered here. And so I have a job interview, and I have to drink to go to the job interview, and the job interview was to get a job coaching college football. All I wanted to do was be around sports my entire life, and so dream job, right? And so I take a few drinks, I go on the interview, and the darnest thing happened. I got the job. It's still working, huh? You see, I didn't know this till I got to AA, that some people drink and their body has a shutoff valve. Like, hey, no more. I don't like how I'm feeling. Like, I'm not wired that way. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you go out to eat or drink with a few normal people, and you'll understand quickly what alcohol abuse is. They leave, like, alcohol in the glass. You ever look at them like, what are you doing? Why are you leaving it? You ever go around and drink everybody else's? Everybody leaves, you wait till they leave, and you pick it up. I do it at college parties. People leave alcohol all the time. Didn't make sense to me. I've never left anything. I've also never took one of anything in my life. Anybody here ever buy a 12-pack and only drink 2 beers? Sure, yeah. And so I get the job. I'm coaching college football. I'm bartering playing time with my players. I'm like, cuz, I'll put you in the game this weekend. You put me in touch with the right people. My boss is like, what's he doing in the game? I'm like, he had a phenomenal week of practice. You see, I have a dream job. All I wanted to do was coach ball, and I have a dream job, and we're watching film, and I have to go down in the bedroom, and I'm looking in the mirror because I don't understand what's wrong with me. And as I look in the mirror, tears start to flow down because I have no idea how my life got so far off track. Like when Johnny and Bobby were in grade school, and Johnny said he wanted to be a firefighter, and Bobby said he wanted to be a cop, I didn't put my hand up and say I want to be a drunk. And I'm looking in the mirror because I have everything outside of looking in. I have a college degree. I have an apartment. I have a car. I have a passport. I have a license. I have car insurance. It's all in my name. And an outsider looking in, you'd think I was doing fantastic at life, but on the inside, I have a dream job and I'm coming apart and I don't know what's wrong with me. All the bills are in the apartment are in my name, and I live with 2 guys and they're giving me money to pay the bills, but every now and again, the power's getting shut off. And again, I don't know why. I don't know why I'm doing the things that I'm doing. I don't have an answer to it. People, have you ever been around people that are like, why don't you stop? I'm like, you should start. I don't know what's wrong with me. Anybody count change? It's like the bar is closed, so you count change. I can still remember the floorboards creaking, and I'm counting change because I got to go over to the A+, and I got to buy a bottle of NyQuil because I don't know what's wrong with me. Because the only thing that's helped me fall asleep is NyQuil. I didn't learn until I got here that there's alcoholic contents in NyQuil. I heard a lady speak about downing bottles of NyQuil because it helped her go to sleep and wake up in the morning, and it was like my experience clicked. I'm like, holy hell, I did that. Drinking NyQuil at night and in the morning to get out of bed for 3 years. No idea why I'm doing the things that I'm doing. I used to bury the garbage in the basement because I couldn't afford the garbage bill. 3 years. Not good. So I hit a breaking point, right? Like we all do. And when I break, I call somebody I know, an uncle who's in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was 25 years old. He did a really good job remaining anonymous. 25 years old, I call my uncle. I say, I need help. I don't know what's wrong with me. He said, all right, kid, we're going to take you to treatment. Now, I'd never been to rehab. I'd never been to a treatment center. I've never heard of recovery houses. I've never heard of anything. And so what I had pictured was Malibu. You know what I'm talking about? Like the fancy bougie boy in Florida. It got like a tanning bed. It got women. It got a beach. It got like a gym center. It got everything in the joint. They're like $30,000. I'm like, bro, if I had $30,000, you think I'd need your help right now? Like, and so I pictured fancy, and my uncle, he drove me to Friends. Yeah. I'm glad you picked up on it. Picked up on it faster than me. It's a nut ward, but I didn't know that. And so after having a fascinating conversation with Pablo over a cheese sandwich in the waiting room, I went through metal detectors. They took my belt. They took the lacing out of my shoes. I didn't have any clothes, so what I did is my pop, he dresses like he's like a 19-year-old gangbanger. He wears all Jordan stuff. So the night of our graduation, he wore like a Jordan jumpsuit. You know what I mean? The football banquet, he would wear like a Jordan onesie with like a bandana, do-rag, backwards hat, gold chains, like Mr. T. I'm like, Pop, you're 63. Like, you ain't 18. But I took all of his shorts, at least like 15 pairs when I went into this nut ward, and they took the lacing out of each pair. They're like $40 a pair. My jaw hit the floor. I'm like, you better find a way to get that lacing back in those shorts, because he's already not too thrilled with me, man, and like, you're not helping my case to go back home. And so for a lack of remembering, I call him Tarzan and Jane. So I'm in the nut ward, and Tarzan shouts numbers like 576, Prophet Muhammad. Jane doesn't speak English. She just shouts loud obscenities. And if you wanted to have a party, because that's what I do, I try to make a party wherever I'm at or make a joke of wherever I'm at. You have breakfast with them. You say five numbers. He gets up, goes on a hiatus. 576, Prophet Muhammad. She gets up, starts shouting loud obscenities. And like, I get extra pancakes, having like a blast in the nut ward. Wild. I got up in there and they looked at me and they said, what's wrong, Mark? I said, I don't understand. How come there's doorknobs on your side of the door? You know what I mean? Like, how come you can open and close this door whenever you want, but like, when I press it, it don't budge? They're like, well, you're crazy. You're not allowed to leave. I said, I'm not crazy though. The lady looked at me and said, you just told us 5 minutes ago you were going to kill yourself. Anybody do this? I looked back and said, I think I changed my mind. Change of heart. Anybody on the way to treatment find $10? I'm good. I don't need your help no more. Here's my personal favorite. Anybody ever get to treatment, AMA? Against medical advice, people are like, you should probably stay. I'm like, nah, I'm out, bro. I got better ideas. Better places to be. I'm so sick, I need help. When I get to the help, I run from the help. I don't even know I'm doing this. You want another personal favorite? I'm so sick, I need help. I come to AA. I ask somebody for help. I get a sponsor. And I'm like, I think what I need is $2,500, a lawyer, and a cheesesteak. And if your girlfriend's got a friend, I'll take it. He's like, we got spiritual help. I'm like, bleh. I don't even know what spiritual help was. Could have been $1 billion. I'm like, get it away from me. No. Incredible, man. And so I go from that facility, they send me to a treatment center. I'm at the treatment center for 10 days, and I'm like, I'm out of here, man. On the idea, I wanted to go to a barbecue. Do you know how crazy that is? You know how wild it is? Like, oh, I'm just going to go to a barbecue. I'm dying. Nah, I'm going to go to a barbecue instead. It's incredible. Like, I'm so sick, I don't realize how sick I am. Like, and I don't understand the amount of help that I actually need. And I really think I'm going to figure it out. And so what I do is I ask people, like, just reflect on your own thinking, man. Where does it land you? Does it land you in weird places, too? And so what always happens to me is I pick up a drink one more time. I have no idea why. I wanted to stop. I had a desire to not drink and drank again. And I couldn't figure out why. Come on, anybody else ever say to people, like, you look at family, you look at friends, you look at significant others and go, I'll never do this again. Anybody? Yeah. And then you find yourself doing it again. And like, I have no idea what's wrong with me. I promised people I'll never do this again. Drink one more time. Went to treatment, wanted to stop. Drank one more time. And so I had a decision to make to go back to the recovery house or to go to a recovery house or to go back to the job. And I wanted to go back and coach ball. And it's the one piece of my story I can't figure out. So you tell me who did it. It's the one piece of my story I can't connect the dots because everything in me wanted to just continue to coach football. And yet a decision was made to go to a recovery house. And I'm here to tell you, like, I didn't make that. Like, I didn't choose that. Something just led me that way. And so my uncle got me in a recovery house with 16 guys. I had an apartment where I was living with two. You picture 16 people. You know what it's like sharing a fridge with 16 people? I didn't even put anything in the fridge. I'm just saying, it's a lot, right? Slept in a bunk bed, went from a queen. I got to the house, they're like, kid, you got a curfew, you're being in at 11 o'clock. I said, cuz, I'm 26, you ain't gonna treat me like a child. They're like, well, if you want to stay here, you'll follow the rules. They're like, you're going to do the dishes. I'm like, bro, I ain't using dishes. I've been eating out every day. Not doing them. They're like, well, if you want to stay here, you'll do the dishes. Guess what I did? I did the dishes. After I called my sponsor and cried for an hour about it. It's incredible. I used to get in my sponsor's car and just unload for 40 minutes. No break, no pause, uninterrupted. He would just let me talk. And I would complain about a guy at my recovery house that stole a 99-cent bag of potato chips. Like, my life is collapsing over a 99-cent bag of potato chips. You understand that? I meet people all the time, they're dying sitting in traffic. It blows me away, because guess what they're going to sit in tomorrow? I meet people all the time, they're being destroyed because somebody at the fast food restaurant messed their order up through the drive-thru. And, like, the smallest things on the planet are destroying me and crippling me, and I have no idea how to handle it, how to deal with it, how to move through life dealing with these things. And so what I would do is I'd get in the car and I'd complain how the guy stole my chips. For about 40 minutes, and maybe some of you are feeling this way tonight. My sponsor would look back at me and he would say, kid, when you get done talking, I want to gouge my eyeballs out with toothpicks. I didn't come from like a gentle, kind, loving, coddling, like, I just had a sponsor who just told me how it was. I'd get in his car and he had Advil on the side door, and when I would start to talk, he would just shake it. Like, kid, you give me, he used to be like, kid, any prolonged exposure to you makes people sick. I'm like, you can't say that, man, you make me drink. You keep saying that kind of stuff, man. He said you wouldn't do me, he said you wouldn't do me the favor. I lost my license for early sobriety, so I was living at this recovery house, lost my license. And so what my sponsor would do is he would pick me up and he would take me to a meeting. So he'd spend 15 minutes to pick me up, 15 minutes to drop me off after the meeting, and he would take me out to eat. It's a half hour out of his life. I couldn't figure out why he was wasting it on a person like me. I couldn't put it together. He'd pick me up and I'd get in the car and he'd have a coffee and he'd give it to me. And what I would do, I didn't have any money, but I sure can front pretty well. And so what I did is I put my hands in my pocket. You know, like you act like you're going to pay and then hope they go, ah, don't worry about it, bro. You see, he was slick. So what he did is he just waited. And I was like, I ain't got no money, man. He's like, I know. Why you keep trying to lie to people? I said, sorry. I'll pay for it. He said, don't worry about it. You know, for 5 years of my sobriety, I continued to try to buy my sponsor a coffee over and over and over and over for 5 years. I'm hard-headed, slow to learn. And then after 5 years of trying, it finally dawned on me. My sponsor was never waiting for me to buy him a coffee. He was waiting for me to buy you a coffee. Isn't that incredible? 5 years to learn that lesson. So now the guys I help, I buy them coffee. And they try to pay. And I always tell them, get the next one, get the next one, get the next one. It takes them some time to figure it out too. He'd take me out to eat. I turned into a little kid in his car, man. Tony's on Frankfurt Ave. We'd go out to eat after every meeting. I'd get in his car. I was 26 years old and I turned into a child. I'd get in his car and I'd go, Rick, Rick, you think we could get some waffle fries tonight? He'd go, yeah, Mark, we can go out to eat tonight. Man taught me everything about Alcoholics Anonymous. You see, I used to act like a child when I got here. I had a sponsor who taught me. He said, kid, you're going to start to sit next to me in meetings. I said, okay. I didn't know why he told me to do that. And the reason he told me to do it was because the moment I sat next to him in a meeting, here's what I would do. I'd pull my phone out. I'd start to play on it. I had no idea. And this is what he would do. I'm like, cuz, you're a little old. You may not want to play that game. He's like, it's disrespectful, kid. It's disrespectful to the people in the meeting, it's disrespectful to the speaker in the meeting, and it's a piss poor example to new people. I'd get up and down 5 times, and he'd grab me and he'd yank me back down by my shirt, and he'd say, what are you doing? I gotta use the bathroom. For the 5th time? He said, nah, Mark, what you can do is you can go before the meeting or you can go after. It's disrespectful to the people in the meeting, it's a piss poor example of what's supposed to go on around here. I used to wear cut sleeve shirts to meetings, man, all the time. And he'd be like, what are you doing? I'm like, what are you talking about? I just came from the gym. He said, bring a shirt. I said, what? You see, what I didn't understand is like there's some people here tonight that have been here way longer than some other people, and they see stuff like molding. Like they already see it happening before you even catch up to it. And they're like, yo, I probably shouldn't do that. And my sponsor saw it. Like he saw the behavior. He said, kid, if you want to stop getting little kid results, stop treating this place like a playground. You see, I didn't know that. I had no idea. He would tell me to get to the meeting at 8 o'clock. I'd show up at 8:05. Anybody else? I'd show up at 8:05 and my teacher would teach. He'd say, what are you doing? I said, I'm busy. New people, busiest people on the planet doing nothing. If you don't believe me, try to get a new person here next week on time. He said, what are you doing? I said, I was at the recovery house. He's like, you can't get on time. He said, here's what we're going to do next week, kid. We're going to show up at 7. I said, but the meeting don't start till 8. He said, yeah, we're going to set chairs up. I said, but I only use one chair. He said, it's called service, Nimrod. He used to call me Einstein in early recovery. I thought it was because I had a degree. It wasn't until I was 6 months sober where he looked at me and he said, we're not complimenting you. Like, I thought it was a compliment. He's like, no, we call you Einstein because you think you know everything and you don't have a clue. I said, well, I'm going to keep looking at it like it's a compliment. You know? He'd teach me how to get a commitment at a home group. You see, when I got here, I didn't know what a sponsor was. I didn't know what a home group was. I didn't know what service was. I had no idea about any of this. He'd say, we're going to go to the business meeting and get your commitment. I was amped to get a commitment. So you know how they pass out commitments at a business meeting. I didn't know any of this. It was foreign to me. I'm just sitting there like, this is awful. They pass out commitments and they go to pass the seventh tradition commitment out. And I go, I'll take that one. And they're like, you don't have enough time sober, kid. So my head sinks in my lap, self-pity, right? Like, woe is me, per usual. And here they're passing out other commitments and they go to pass out the trash commitment. And my sponsor goes, Mark will take that. I don't even hear it. I don't even hear it. Somebody goes, Mark, you got the trash commitment. I'm like, amped up, trash, commitment, commitment, trash. The longest intimate relationship was with the trash can. At my home group. Spirit of rotation, they told me. So I had to give up the commitment. I'd take the trash out. When I first took the trash out, what I would do is I'd jump up and down around people as soon as the meeting ended. I'd let people know I'm taking the trash out. The trash guy. And so my sponsor said, what you're going to do is you're going to wait till everybody leaves the meeting. Then you can take it out. Then I had to give it up. So what I did is I let you take the trash commitment on paper, but I sat next to the trash can and still took it out. And my sponsor would catch me doing that. And he would say, here's what we're going to do. When the whole meeting empties out, you're going to go clean the alley. When everybody leaves, you're going to clean the alley. I was like, that ain't even a commitment, man. You just made that up, bro, like off the top of your head. And so I'll give you a snapshot of what I did in early recovery. For the first 36 days of my sobriety, because maybe some of you are currently trying this. So for the first 36 days of my sobriety, the first thing I tried was Planet Fitness. Anybody going to the gym yet? Push-ups or sit-ups? Yeah, it's like 5 days of sobriety. Boom, guaranteed. You pay $20, you can go tanning, you kill two birds with one stone. It's like another 4 days of sobriety. I let an addict put a tattoo on me. I think he spelled the word wrong, but it's like another 4 days of sobriety. Boom. I tried everything you could think of for 36 days. I actually bought a $900 gold rope chain, thinking like that was going to solve everything going on with me. I actually wore it to a meeting. My sponsor wasn't supposed to be at the meeting, but guess who showed up? Sponsor. And so the moment he showed up, you know that voice you got in the head? Like the one that talks to you? As soon as he walked through the door, like that voice is like, yo, you see who just walked in? I'm like touching myself. Like, he knows. He's going to find out I just spent $900 of money I don't have on a gold rope chain, and I'm not paying my back rent at the recovery house. And so he comes up to me after the meeting, and he's like, what's going on? I'm like, nothing. I'm like touching myself. Now he's like, did you buy a chain, dude? I'm like, maybe. He's like, you're going to take it back, kid. I'm like, no, I'm not. He's like, no, you're going to take it back. I said, all right, I'll take it back, and I'm going to do it my way. And so what I did is I took it to a pawn shop, and they'd give me $120. I'd make a financial amends. Then when he wasn't looking, I'd go take it back out. I'd put it on until he found me wearing it again. I'd take it back to the pawn shop. This went on for 5 years. You know, wild. I tried everything you could think of for 36 days. Shoes, clothing, shopping, arts and crafts, music, Netflix. Anybody binge watch like 3 seasons of anything lately? Like, what? Anybody try food yet? Try gambling, scratch off tickets, nicotine, coffee, Red Bull. You plug it in. I tried all of it. Video games. I work at a treatment center. I was just down in Florida. This had to be 3 weeks ago. 2 or 3 weeks ago, I'm down in Florida, I'm doing room checks at the treatment center, and there's literally a kid sitting there playing video games for like at least 7 hours every night. I'm like, my man. Like, I get it. Like, I work at the treatment center, I gotta tell kids, like, yo, can you stop dancing on the table? Like, you just destroyed your life, burnt every bridge you got. And you're like, you're having a grand old time around here, huh? Like, no connection to, like, what reality, Jesus. And I remember that. I would go out to eat, actually, and thank God for you people. You were my second step. I'd go out to eat because you invited me. He said, Mark, why don't you come out to eat with us after a meeting? I'd go out to eat, and I remember I would sit at a table. I'd sit at a table, and all you guys would be talking, and I'd be thinking. And the thoughts I'd be thinking is, like, I got nothing of substance to offer to this conversation. I got nothing of value. These people have no idea who I am. They do not care who I am. They want nothing to do with me. And I'd think the entire meal, man, and we'd get done eating, and they'd go, you should come back next week. And I would. And I would think next week. It was interesting, though, because, like, something happened along the lines. I'd go out with my sponsor. He would take me with him every night, and for 2 to 4 hours of my night, I felt protected. Like, I felt safe. And I didn't feel safe for a long time. After 36 days of trying it Mark's way, you know, there were people that had been here that got an answer on how to feel better, how to stay sober, and I wanted to try it my way first. After 36 days of burning everything I could, to feel better, and it all stopped working. I called my sponsor. I said, I don't feel how you feel, man. Me at 36 days sober does not feel how you feel at 7 years. He said, kid, before you make the decision to leave, can I ask you some questions? I said, go ahead, shoot. And the questions he had asked me was, he said, Mark, do you pray? I said, no. He said, Mark, do you meditate? I said, no. He said, did you do a written inventory? I said, no. He said, did you share that inventory with a sponsor? I said, no. He said, have you made any amends? I said, no. He said, do you do a daily inventory? I said, no. He said, do you do a nightly inventory? I said, no. He said, do you sponsor anybody on this planet? I said, no. He said, do you have a home group? I said, no. He said, do you have a service position at the home group? I said, no. He said, are you in touch with a sponsor on a day-to-day basis? I said, no. Do you know that's 11 things that I had no idea people were doing when they left here? Like, I had no idea other people were doing that. You see, I come to meetings and meetings serve me while I'm here, and then the steps kind of treat me when I'm out there, because I spend a whole lot more of my time out there. And they teach me how to deal with people, but I didn't know that. He said, all right, well, come over to my house tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. Now, this was on a Saturday I made this phone call. He says, come over tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. My response to him was, that's kind of early. I'm dying, calling somebody for help, who's offering the help, and the best I got is, that's early. No idea I'm even doing it. He said, if you want help, get to my house. If you don't, just take a look around. There's other people that do. And so I got to his house, 9:05, he'd teach me again. He'd be like, kid, we said 9. I looked at him and I said, yeah, I'm here. He said, no, 9 means 9. He says, you show up late, next time you just go home. And so when I got to his house, I didn't want anything my sponsor had at the time. He was 48, I think, had a big nose, looks like Robert De Niro. He was single, lived in an apartment. He had a cat. I'm allergic to cats. I'm like, he drove a shit Mercury. I wanted nothing he had. I called him back at 6 months sober and I said, I was severely mistaken about what you had. You see, I have a tendency to look at the wrong things. I gauge the wrong things. And so I would sit down with him. And so as I was sitting with him, he had a cat, and I started to scratch myself. And he looked at me. He said, are you high? I said, how dare you question my sobriety at 36 days sober? The arrogance, man. I've lied to everybody in my life about my sobriety time, and then the first time somebody questions it in sobriety, I blow a gasket. I can't believe you would do that. I wanted a parade on Broad Street when I was a year sober. Is that wild? I went back to my mom, and I'm like, Mom, you're not going to believe this. I'm a year sober. She's like, Mark, I haven't killed anybody in 57. But like, I wanted to be patted on the butt for not doing something I shouldn't have been doing the whole time. But he used that to teach me. He said, kid, in the same way you're allergic to cats, your body's allergic to alcohol. First time I ever heard that. My bartender never told me that. My bartender didn't tell me, like, yo, when you take this drink, you're not going to be able to stop. You're going to have to check into a rehab. Not a single person ever told me that. I didn't know. So I looked back at my sponsor. I said, let me get this straight. You're telling me I got an allergy to alcohol? He said, yes. I said, yeah, but I got an allergy to cats, too. He said, correct. I said, yeah, but I don't got to go to Cats Anonymous to stay away from cats. Like, I've never once deleted my cat dealer phone numbers. Never tried it. I'm not going to try white cats tomorrow, black cats the next day. I'm not going to load up a house full of kittens and decide to dive in there in a week. Just stay away. He said, well, kid, in my opinion, this is the most misunderstood aspect of the 12-step fellowships. He said, you have this thing called the mental obsession. That's literally going to make you pick up a drink at some point in the future. It doesn't matter what you want. Because I sat with him at 36 days sober, and he said, how are you feeling about sobriety? I said, I think I got it. He said, I'm not asking what you think. He said, what you think's the problem, kid? He said, I'm just asking you to reflect on your past. What does your past show? It shows whenever I want to quit drinking, I end up drinking again. Every time, bar none. Sponsor some guys that have been in 30, 40 treatment centers. So every time I make my mind up to quit drinking, I stop for a period of time only to start. He said, yeah, it's the most misunderstood aspect of the 12-step fellowships, kid. That my brain's going to make me drink again. I didn't know that. I had no idea. You see, you can read it off the wall, powerless. I didn't understand what that meant. He said, kid, you're powerless over while you're drinking because of the allergy. You can't control it anymore. But more importantly, you're powerless over while you're sober. Your own brain is going to make you pick it up again, and there's nothing you can do to stop it. I said, but I really want to be sober. He said, ha, that's cute. You think that matters? I didn't know. So he looked at me. He said, that's cute. You think that matters? He said, you were just in a treatment center, right, Mark? I said, I was. He said, did you want to get sober? I said, yeah, I was in the treatment center. There's the evidence. He said, how well did it hold up? I said, it didn't. He said, what makes you think it's going to be different this time? And in that moment, when he asked me that question, something pierced. For the first time in my life, I understood I was going to drink again, and there wasn't anything I could do to stop it. And that's a neat conundrum to be in. When you desperately have to be sober, and you desperately need to be sober, and you desperately want to be sober, and you know you're going to drink again, and there's nothing you could do to come between that. And something in me broke. It collapsed. I said, so what am I supposed to do? He said, now you get it. He said, now you get it. You know, we sat to talk about the second step. He asked me if I believed in God. I said, I do. I just don't think he likes me. He said, Mark, who said he's supposed to? I said, that's a good question. I don't know. I have no idea. He said, well, lucky for you, now he likes you. I said, you're allowed to do that? He said, kid, you can do whatever you want. It's cool because my daughter called me today. She was on the way home from school with her mom. And she called me. And it was a FaceTime. And so I answered the phone and she's looking at me. She's got a baggie in her hand. And she's shaking the baggie. She's 5. I'm like, Rem, I can't see it. Like, you got to pull the camera back and you got the bag in front of the camera. And it's like, she's still not getting it. Like, you know what I mean? And so eventually she gets it back and she's shaking it. And what's in the bag is a tooth. You see, while she was at school, her tooth fell out. And my daughter's on the phone and she's ecstatic. She's like, Dad, my tooth fell out. My tooth fell out. I said, no way. What's that mean? She said, Dad, the tooth fairy's coming tonight. I said, I'm glad with your mother because I'm glad you're with her because she's going to buck up for it. I don't have to. You know what I mean? My daughter, a 5-year-old, thinks a tooth fairy is going to fly into her room tonight and put money under a pillow and take the tooth. Like, she really thinks that. Did you think some giant guy in a red suit was going to come down your chimney when you were a kid and hide presents?
Yeah.
She thought, like, that the Easter Bunny walked to every house and just hides Easter eggs. And my question to people is, like, is there any difference in that and believing in this? And it's like, no, it's just a state of mind. It's like, in the morning, I'm like, Buddhist, you know, the bald dude. And then by 11, it's like, I believe in Jesus, Lord and Savior. And then by noon, I get paid and I'm agnostic again. I got it from here. It's just a state of mind, man. And we looked at the second step. My sponsor said, do you believe in something? And he said, kid, before you answer this question, I'd like to ask you another question. He said, according to what we taught you in the first step, what happens if you believe in nothing? I said, I drink. He said, how do you feel about God now? You see, the only problem people have with the second step is they don't understand the first. He said, do you think something worked for me? Here's the evidence of the second step. It's been in front of me the entire time. It was you people. It was the people that were here before I got here. There's the evidence. Been working for 80 plus years. You know what's crazy to me is like the same stuff people were talking about today, they were talking about 80 years ago. And when I'm long gone, not on this planet anymore, guess what they'll be talking about? The same thing. It hasn't changed. Regardless how many times people relapse, come in and out, the answer is always going to be the same. I come here, I connect with you, I develop a relationship with a power, and all of a sudden my life radically changes. Like, I'm not the same person that walked in almost 7 years ago. I'm not. Evidence of that is, like, I just told you, my daughter called me today. When I'm out there, I'm not getting phone calls from nobody. When I was drinking, my mother, I called my mom. As I'm on the phone with my mom, here's her response. Kid, the only thing you're allowed to call me for is a ride to the bridge so I could drive you there and watch you jump off. Like, that's what I do to people when I'm drinking and living that lifestyle. And so I moved through this process, guidance of a sponsor, and he teaches me about Alcoholics Anonymous and proper etiquette and how to show up on time and how to stay late and how to extend a hand and try to be of service. And we get to the ninth step and I start to make amends, and all of a sudden my mom, after 3 weeks, says, would you like to split a pizza? Wow, jump off a bridge, split a pizza, huh? Not a big deal to you, but it's a huge deal to me. 3 months sober, she says, why don't you come back out at recovery house, come back home. You see, jump off a bridge, split a pizza, come back home. 3 years sober, she said, why don't you take the car, I was going to give you a ride to the bridge, and why don't you take it for your daughter. Jump off a bridge, split a pizza, come back home, take the car. 4 years sober, her siblings asked me to read the eulogy at her mom's funeral. It's wild, isn't it? That's crazy. I used to be a drunk, nobody could rely on, nobody cared about, I couldn't show up anywhere. And all of a sudden, like, I'm getting asked to do stuff. All of a sudden, people want me back in their life. Around Christmas time, my mother and father are going to call me, and they're going to invite me downtown because they get a hotel room, and they're going to invite me downtown to go out to eat and then take my daughter to Christmas Village down there. That's crazy, isn't it? Like this past weekend, I was just down in Wildwood, New Jersey with my daughter, my mother, and my father in a one-bedroom condo. Me and my daughter slept on a couch. It's wild, isn't it? You see, I thought I was just shooting for sobriety, and then what I've found is like it's so much more than that if you want it to be. If you want it to be. I'd get to the 12th step, my sponsor, man, he was a G. I'd sit at the home group and a guy would walk past and he'd go, Mark, do you know him? I'd go, no. Another guy would walk past, he'd go, do you know him? I'd go, no. He said, when are you going to get the point? It ain't about you no more. I said, I can't help him. He smells. He said, you were 5 times worse. I said, I can't help him. What if I help him and he dies? He said, well, might happen. I said, see, I shouldn't do it then. He said, well, if you don't do it, you die. I said, let me get this straight because I'm pretty intelligent. I said, I help him, he dies. I don't help him, I die. Who do you think I'd pick? Wow, you selfishness in my favor at the 12th step, huh? Didn't know it. And so I'd get the opportunity to actually sit down and start to teach some men. Incredible, the idea that somebody thought I had something that could benefit them. You know how wild that is? When I was out there living the life I was living, not a single person came up to me and said, you think you could teach me how you're living life? I'd like to live it the way you're living it. Not one. Counter to that, bunch of people ask me all the time now. You think you could help me with this? You think you could help me with that? You think you could teach me this? You think you could show me that? But when I was out there, it was like none of it. Nobody wanted anything to do with me. Actually, I couldn't find 6 people to carry my casket when I was out there. All of a sudden, I'm in the center of Alcoholics Anonymous and I have friends today. Wow. Like, touches your heart, doesn't it? I have a heartbeat today. Like, I care about people. It's crazy. That it ain't always about me wherever I go anymore. You see, it used to always be about me. Anybody else? I used to go to a funeral and I'd look down at my shoes and I'm like, I think I got the wrong shoes on. Somebody would die, I'd make like an RIP status. Make it about me. I come to a meeting with 40 people and I think it's about me. I'd be in a treatment center, I think it's about me. I go back home, I think it's about me. I had the batting order wrong. It was God, you, me. It's God, you, me. And when I start to operate from that batting order, wild things happen. I told you I used to bury garbage in the basement of an apartment that I rented. Almost a year and a half ago, I bought a house. Is that not wild? I was in tears on the way home. I was in tears. I bought a house. I have a 5-year-old daughter today. She's never seen me take a drink. 5-year-old daughter. That's not what's crazy to me, that I have a daughter. What's crazy is like somebody thought it was a good idea to have a kid with me. Before my daughter goes to bed, like last night, she'll go, Daddy, you're going to stay in the room with me, yeah? I said, of course. She said, 2 years ago, she said, Dad, you hold my hand? I said, absolutely. Guess who taught me to do both? You people. I was speaking, I had a few God experiences, man. I was speaking in Delaware one time, and buddy Max, kid I was sponsoring, SP, to go, and he was supposed to go, and I called him. He said, I can't make it, Mark, but can you pick up 2 guys at the recovery house? I said, sure, no problem, I'll pick them up. I had no idea who the guys were. I just picked them up. We drive down. I stop at a pizza joint to get a drink, and the name of the pizza joint is Nick and Joe's Pizza. Guess what the name of the 2 guys in my back seat were? Nick and Joe. You know, I call Max, and I'm like, you're not going to believe this. The pizza joint we stopped at, Nick and Joe's, and the guys in the back seat, Nick and Joe. He's like, nah, Mark, you ain't going to believe this. Good thing I didn't go to that meeting because the guy in the recovery house overdosed, and I was here to hit him with Narcan, and he's still breathing. But if I went with you, nobody'd be here. He'd be dead. Crazy, ain't it? I thought about going back to grad school for a year, a whole year thinking about it. And I finally decided to just do it, and I go on the interview, and I say a prayer before I go into the interview. I'm sitting at the table, and on the table has a bunch of magazines, university magazines, and the cover of the magazine reads, Shedding the Stigma on Addiction. And there's a picture of a gentleman on the front cover. He's a professor at the university. He's 9 years sober at the time. I said a prayer, I read that, and I go, I know where I'm supposed to be. That's not what's crazy, though. What's crazy is less than 3 minutes later, guess who comes walking through the door to interview me? Same guy on the magazine, huh? Just texted him today, actually. It's incredible, man. I believe the universe lays out a path, and my job is to just stay out of the way. and just show up. And you taught me how to do that. And wild, magical, mesmerizing things happen. I can't explain how this works. All I know is that it does. It works. Sometimes I get in the way, though, you know. I'm a little over 6.5 years sober, and I've struggled with my fair share of things along sobriety. You know, whether it was relationships or when me and my daughter's mother had separated, a codependent relationship breakup at 3 years sober. Collapsed my life at 29 years old, thinking I'm 3 years sober, moving back into a bedroom at my parents' with a little girl. I'm not supposed to, my life shouldn't look like this. I help God's kids. How's my life look like this? The arrogance. You see, something interesting happened. I'd start to show up to get my daughter, and I would treat her mother poorly. The words I spoke, you know. And one day it clicked for me as I'm picking up my little girl, and I'm talking to her mother poorly. It clicks like, oh my God, I'm training this little girl the type of man to date when she turns 14, 15, 16. And I'm the model, you see. And if I continue to show up and treat people this way, that's the type of man that my daughter's going to gravitate towards. And so all of a sudden I head on this journey of self-discovery and learn how to actually treat people and how to actually talk to people. Because I sponsor a few people, man, mesmerizing stuff. Guy called me, and on the phone, he said, chick I'm messing with doesn't think I respect her. I said, what are you confused about? I said, that's how you speak about your partner, huh, man? That's how you speak about your partner. Somebody you're supposed to build a lifelong journey with, and that's the vocabulary we use, huh? You see. I don't know. I continue to just try to show up, man, stay plugged in, connect. I think the name of the game, as far as I can tell, is connection. So the more people I can connect with, the better. But I believe that the base foundation of Alcoholics Anonymous is paramount. Home group, sponsorship, prayer, step work, fellowship, you know. You guys carried me when I was broken at 3 years sober. Anybody else go through a codependent relationship breakup, or is it just me? This is what it looks like. You're in a sick relationship. You're like, I got to get out of this. And then you get out of it, and then 3 days later, your brain's like, just text them. See how they're doing. Just check on them. Some of you do get it. From that, developed eating disorder, gambling, right? One thing after the next. Like, I really believe the universe knows how to get under your skin. Like, I believe this to my core. Like, the universe knows how to get under your skin. Precisely how. And you're going to continue to be rocked and rocked and rocked until you figure it out. And that everything's not actually, it's not actually a problem, it's just an obstacle for me to learn, for me to evolve, for me to grow, for me to become a better version of Mark. And that's how I try to view the journey now. This is happening because I need to evolve, I need to grow, I need to learn, so I can be a better version of me. But it just doesn't feel good when I go through things, you know, but yeah, I think that's it. Thank you so much for having me, guys.